Welcome to Super Serious Film Fest, our theme series of movie reviews.
This season covers the best and the worst of Nick Cage.
The summer and winter of his career.
In what we're calling Season of the Cage.
So, Con Air. Where we stand on Con Air? What do you think of Con Air?
It's one of those movies that I hate, but I love. It's a bad movie that I really loved watching as a late teen when this thing came out. The script is really sloppy, but it has a lot of high points to counteract its low points. I think there is some decent action in the movie. I enjoy the privilege of watching Nick Cage do a couple of bad accents in this movie. I enjoy John Malkovich chewing a little bit of scenery, too. There's a lot to love with the lot to hate. How about you?
I think this movie is Shitty the Rock.
You're not wrong.
And I guess that's because I saw in the forums there's people saying, you know, when we were putting this into the bad Nick Cage, they were taking exception and umbrage. I don't know how tongue-in-cheek it was, but I just think that this is a bad film. And it was fun to watch, like, in the live watch with you, just to rip it and, like, laugh and joke. God, Nick Cage's hair is like a balding Tarzan in this movie. What the fuck?
It's amazing.
I can't believe it. A whole team approved that.
Dude, just wait until it gets in the wind. Like, there's no wind yet on this plane.
I did get to see his dopey. But to sit here and watch it in isolation for pleasure, I just feel like there are much better action-adventure movies that have better characters, that are more internally consistent, that have better action, there's a lot of times we talk about this as The Walking Dead, right? Like, an action set piece is meaningless unless you understand the stakes and unless you're invested in the stakes. And unfortunately, this movie completely lost me in the first 15 minutes and was ever able to get it back. So unless we're talking about an exercise of drunkenly jeering and mocking it, as it flails around in its performance, I wouldn't voluntarily watch this movie again. I'd rather watch Predator or The Rock I'd prefer The Rock's The Rundown. I'd rather watch The Rock or The Rock in something else rather than the Nick Cage in a bad wig doing subpar stunts and stuff in this movie.
Well, that's exactly what I hope to do today, to just hold this movie down and give it a bunch of wedgies and noogies.
Purple nurples.
Yeah, because that's all you can really do with this movie.
Okay. Well, for people that don't know or are late to the party, Con Air is a movie about a soldier, Cameron Poe, played by one Nicolas Cage, who's unfairly sentenced to a lengthy prison stay for defending his pregnant wife from drunken bullies after accidentally killing one of the assailants. He forms a bond with his baby girl from behind the prison bars and counts the days until he's reunited with his two girls in his life. After 8 years, he's paroled and is transported along with a plane full of hardened criminals back to his home state of Alabama. Along the way, the plane is hijacked by criminal mastermind Cyrus the Virus, played by John Malkovich. On the ground, the good guys are represented by John Larkin, a U.S. Marshal played by John Cusack, and Malloy, a tough-talking DEA agent played by Star Trek's own Colm Meaney. Poe is conflicted as he wants to get back to his baby girl, but he's unwilling to abandon a diabetic prisoner who will die unless he receives medical treatment within the next few hours. Along the way, complications arise, crosses are doubled, and we somehow crash a plane on the Las Vegas Strip, which sets up a ridiculous running battle through the streets of Vegas involving tons of police and a hijacked ladder truck. And somehow we are left measurably dumber along the way.
Can I present an alternate synopsis of this movie?
Okay.
It's about a man who loves a prisoner more than his wife and daughter.
Yeah.
That's really the core of this movie is I would rather save this man who, let's keep in mind, we don't know much about this man. The one thing we do know is that he is in the same prison block where Nicolas Cage was put after he murdered someone. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So likely a bad dude who has done bad shit, right?
He's also an insulin-dependent diabetic that Nick Cage befriends by giving him Hostess snowballs. I just now realized how fucked up that is.
You're 100% right.
Maybe
oh, wow.
Nick Cage gave him diabetes. You're giving this guy a pure sugar product.
Uh-huh.
And he has to have daily insulin injections to balance him out. That's not how any of that works.
The funny thing is, I can understand why Nicolas Cage loves this man more than his family, because he's seen this man more than his family.
True.
Like, he has more of a relationship with Baby O than he does with Casey or his wife. Yeah. I mean, he spent 7 years with this man, right?
Right.
How many years did he spend with his wife? Like, one, two?
I don't know.
They made it clear that he was in the army before this.
And he just got back. Right.
Which is a stroke of bad luck. I mean.
Well, the other thing is, that was
But
all...
he needs to at least tell them, is my point. Like, if he's going to love a man more than he loves them, tell them.
Yeah. He can't Freddie Mercury this poor woman.
No.
I don't buy for a second that a judge in Alabama is going to sentence, is going to throw the book at a veteran that mm-hmm. is assaulted with a deadly weapon as he's defending his pregnant wife.
He had a deadlier weapon, though. That's the problem.
His open palm strike to this guy's face. I mean, that doesn't, and especially he's got this big, fat, sweaty, hillbilly lawyer that's like, look, Poe, mm-hmm. you know, if you just plead guilty to something you didn't do, you know, you can get out in like a year or two. But, you know, if you go stand trial, you're going to get 10 years. Then we cut to the judge saying, you've pled guilty, but because you're a soldier and your hands are deadly weapons, you have to be treated extraordinary. And he gives him 10 years anyway.
Right.
Like, this guy's got to have the worst lawyer to agree to a plea deal that's somehow worse or as bad as the maximum penalty he could have gotten by having his day in court.
I mean, you can tell this is a bad lawyer just by looking at him.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
I mean, this guy is disheveled. It looks like he just rolled out of bed, forgot
right.
he had a court case, and rushed out in a taxi to get there.
Yeah, he looks like he's not maybe a lawyer. He's a para-lawyer like Danny DeVito in The Rainmaker. Like, he's got a law degree, but he hasn't quite passed the bar. He's tried 6 times, though.
No, the sentence is to make Nicolas Cage, and they try this with a couple of characters in the movie, I don't think it works either time, is to make him look like a badass, right? Like, oh, his fists are so powerful, he's mm-hmm. such a deadly weapon that we have to lock him up because he doesn't play by the same laws as everyone else.
Yeah.
And they're doing that because they want you to think Nick Cage is a badass. Unfortunately, it has the exact opposite effect for me, which is to make me laugh at this fucking judge who's mm-hmm. an idiot, mm-hmm. laugh at the entire judicial system mm-hmm. in the process. And it does nothing for Nick Cage's character.
No, it makes him look like a dumbass, not a badass.
Yeah.
And can we talk? So he's essentially doing his high character from Raising Arizona, who when you've got Nick Cage looking like Nick Cage and sounding like Nick Cage in Raising Arizona, high from Raising Arizona is not a genius.
Fuck no.
I feel like I took that experience into this movie and think, well, this guy is just dumb. But they also want him to be like, his special forces. Like, if this is a Navy SEAL, I take it for granted that among the other things Navy SEALs are, is they're all very smart. Very smart, capable of rational thought, complex thinking, teamwork, all these things. Poe is none of these things. Mm-hmm. Everything he touches turns to shit in this movie.
Yeah.
So he's dumb. He's...
Well, the accent is doing a lot of heavy lifting on making me think that he's dumb. And I know not all people with that accent are dumb. I don't want to, like,
no, we've
paint
seen Justified.
The broad brush.
We've seen Justified.
Right, but...
You can tell a story of guys talk like that that are
you can.
Brilliant.
Boyd Crowder is a brilliant man.
Yeah.
But the accent, especially coming out of Nick Cage's face, is mm-hmm. not doing good things here. And it's not just that you know, it's a Southern accent. It's that he doesn't do a great Southern accent either. It's, in fact, a pretty bad one.
Right.
I said, put the bunny back in the box.
Uh-huh. It's the worst fucking accent I've ever heard. And he gets to do 2 bad accents in this movie because when he goes to prison, he starts practicing Spanish.
Yes.
And he gets to do an awful Spanish accent as well.
Mi esposa y yo vamos a tomar unas margaritas en el yate, por favor.
Yeah. His accent sounds like every sentence should be ended with a uh-huh.
Right.
Like it's a goofy. He's doing goofy.
He really is, yeah.
Uh-huh, yeah. Oh, yeah, Mickey, uh-huh. I mean, it's something to behold.
It's amazing. But I mean, the hair also contributes. I mean, it's so funny to me to see the juxtaposition of Nick Cage in the best shape of his life.
Yeah.
I mean, let's not make any bones about it, right? He looks great, like, from a muscle perspective.
Yeah, he does.
From a build perspective. But the hair. I mean, the hair does nothing for this character.
Who decided to give Nick Cage this long flowing hair, but with the same male pattern baldness that he has in real life?
I know. It does look a bit ridiculous.
It's like one of those guys, like, he seems like the kind of guy that is going to grow his hair out long and tie it back in a ponytail and just have a bald spot up top. That's never a good
look. I mean,
he's
going to be a Klingon, right? It's essentially what he's going to turn into.
Yeah. Totally. It's crazy. And they even, like, showcase it a couple times. Like, when he steps off the prison bus and he breathes, there's a scene of him breathing the free air, and he kind of smiles dopey and, like, closes his eye, let the sun's at his, and you can see kind of his long flowing but sparsely populated locks. The top of his head looks like a teenager trying to grow out their first beard.
Right.
He's got a neck beard on his head. Uh-huh. And I don't, it's a crazy, crazy ass thing.
No, it's glorious. So going back to the Spanish thing real quick, I do want to talk about this because I don't think that anything other than the picture and the bunny in this opening jail montage ever comes of anything in the movie.
Like I said, him learning Spanish.
So I actually think Spanish is the worst of it, but there's origami. I'll come back to Spanish in a second.
Yeah,
the origami doesn't go anywhere, right? Like, he creates this amazing crane and he makes it flap and it goes nowhere.
I think that's supposed to make him look smarter, like he's this warrior philosopher, and there's a scene of, like, this prison is in a full riot mode.
Yeah.
There's things on fire, there's men running around screaming, and he's just in his bunk, you know, reading his origami book or whatever. It's like they want you to think that he is the Sean Connery character from The Rock, that in prison he's bettering himself and flexing his mind. He's like the good guy version of Cyrus the Virus, but everything else about his character reads dumbass.
Oh, shit. Do you think his hair was influenced by Sean Connery in The Rock?
Oh, God.
Yeah. I didn't think about that until right now.
Oh, do you think, like, maybe this is all from Nick Cage? Is like, look, I've done prison movies, and I'm telling you, a wrongfully imprisoned man is driven by the emotional betrayal to grow his hair out as a sign of rebellion against society.
Hell
maybe.
Yeah. I think we just cracked that puzzle.
His uncle Francis Ford Coppola said, hey, you know, Marlon Brando used to shove his mouth full of cotton balls and no one knew what the hell he was doing, but Godfather. And he's like, I'm going to get some quirky acting things. And that's his quirky acting thing.
The fucked up thing is, I think this is the least quirky acting I've ever seen Nicolas Cage do.
Yeah.
The director came in and said, we don't want Nicolas Cage, but we're stuck with him. Let's make him do nothing.
He never gets out of stage one Cage.
No. I mean, he's not even Cage in this movie.
This isn't even a Nick Cage performance.
No. But let's go back to the Spanish thing, because I think the Spanish thing is actually a big mistake, because at some point in this movie, there's this letter in Cyrus's cell that is written in Spanish.
Mm-hmm.
And the only whiff of Spanish that we have in this movie, period, up to that point, is Nicolas Cage practicing Spanish. And I feel like this mistakenly would lead the audience to connect some dots think, oh shit, Nicolas Cage is in on it.
Or he's going to be able to blow the lid off of it. It's one of the many unfinished off ramps or on ramps that this movie has that just kind of blows by. You can clearly see they're meant to take this exit and they're like,
So then we get to like the prison prisoner transfer. And you get the kind of standard movie lineup thing where they go through each of the prisoners and they talk about them. And Ving Rhames gets out there. He's Diamond Dog. I was happy to see Ving Rhames in this movie because I forgot that he was in it.
Right.
Because his character, you think he's going to be a major player in this movie, and he's kind of not.
Yeah.
He's kind of just like everybody except for Cyrus, who is the major player. And I just found it funny that, like, they go through everybody, and then Nicolas Cage, oh, he's nobody. But I guess Ving Rhames sold the rights to a book of his life story of being a black militant leader.
In the universe?
In the universe of yeah.
Because I'm like, oh man, what if Ving Rhames actually did a fictional biography of Diamond Dog and did that? That's like, I kind of want to buy that. This is introduced as like a complication potentially for everybody, but Cyrus in particular. But we're promised the Day of the Dog. The Day of the Dog never comes.
Dude, I waited this entire fucking movie twice. Hoping, like, on second watch that I had missed it in the live watch.
Right.
I was looking for the Day of the Dog, and right. It never comes. And there's a scene where he, you know, he breaks it down to Nicolas Cage. He says, oh, I'm playing the Uncle Tom, essentially, until mm-hmm. we get to where we're going, and then it's the Day of the Dog.
I was just wondering what a black militant, that would be you, was doing taking orders from a white boy on a power trip. Don't you think that's strange?
It's a means to an end, my white friend. A means to an end. See, eyes can play house nigga till we get to where we're going. And then the Day of the Dog begins.
The Day of the Dog means taking orders from the white guy again?
Yeah, like, throughout for the whole movie until you're dead.
Right, until you fucking fall off the back of that fire truck.
And like, I'm not saying that the Day of the Dog should have gone over successful. It should have been a smashing success. But I think the Day of the Dog never got started.
It didn't.
Like Ving Rhames kept hitting the snooze button on the Day of the Dog. And they need 15 more minutes. And then he just kept on hitting snooze, kept on sitting snooze, and midnight strikes, and he slept through the Day of the Dog.
Yeah.
How in the fuck, in retrospect, did they get all of these fairly successful and highly regarded actors to be in this movie? Like, that had to be unnecessarily expensive. They went through this phase of, like, these action movies just being loaded with stars. Armageddon's the same way.
Yeah.
You know? And there's a lot of this is kind of like getting the band together. Like, you just get as many famous names as you possibly can to be in, like, top to bottom all these roles, even if they don't call for it, you know? Mm-hmm. Oh, wait, can we talk about Cole Meany?
Okay.
Because we talk about, so they introduce, these guys are supposed to be opposites. You know, you've got the Birkenstock wearing guy who wants to talk about the brutalization of criminals but is skeptical of black power movements versus Cole Meany, who pulls up in this classic vet wearing driving gloves.
God.
And he just says, he's got some incredible lines of dialogue. Like, this is a guy who will illegally park against all of the handicapped parking spots. But then also say that anyone that breaks the law deserves to be treated like an animal.
Mm-hmm.
And who also says,
have you found Vince Larkin?
We're having trouble reaching him, sir.
Of course you're having trouble reaching him. He's off saving the rainforest or recycling his sandals or some shit.
He's shitting on the environment. He's shitting on the concept of recycling. This guy is just a caricature.
He is.
And I guess that's the charm of this movie is, everyone plays this broadly painted brush role, and no one ever surprises you with playing against that type. So it's kind of easy to keep score.
Oh, yeah. I mean, this is chock full of stereotypes and chock full of characters who are just caricatures.
Mm-hmm.
Cole Meany being maybe the least of those.
I just looked at my notes. The Diamond Dog's exact... He's mentioned that he's the general of the Black Gorillas.
Yes, that is a quote from the film.
Nathan Jones, a.k.a. Diamond Dog, former general of the Black Gorillas.
So, like, I see Jerry Bruckheimer, he's with the writer, is like, we want this guy to be like a Black Panther type, but we can't do Black Panther because that's it might piss people off. What animal could we pick? What animal could we pick to represent an angry black man that won't piss people off like Black Panther? I get it, some form of ape. Yes, let's make him be the leader of the Black Gorillas, an angry, fuck?
I mean,
this is crazy town.
Right, I look at some of this and I go, this needs to be satire, but it's nowhere near fucking smart enough to be satire.
No.
Not even close.
No.
And so it can't be, and so now it's just wraps all the way back around to offensive.
Right.
And like, what do you do? What do you do about something like that?
I don't know. Do you think Jerry Bruckheimer meant well? Do you think he just doesn't know?
I just thought he didn't care. Like, late 90s.
Yeah. Like, what will get people worked up on every side of the aisle? Let's just do that.
I just think people in general were a lot less aware of these kinds of issues. And to throw it into the most mainstream of mainstream films,
mm-hmm.
nobody batted an eye mm-hmm. back then. Now you... oh my God, if this script came out and leaked and you saw Ving Rhames is going to be the leader of the Black Gorillas, huh?
Yeah.
People would be up in arms. They would change that immediately. Never makes it to screen.
No, no. I think Ving Rhames says, fuck you if they approach him for that.
Probably. Like,
because there's a lot of, in the further you go back in Hollywood, the more I think minority characters are willing to swallow some shit just to get the work. But like nowadays, that just shit wouldn't fly. Another piece of lazy scripting, because they're just, all this stuff is supposed to like sell us on how mean and tough these guys are. Cyrus the Virus is introduced. He's 39 years old. He spent 25 years in institutions.
Holy shit. Okay.
I'm not a math expert, but that means if he served 25 consecutive years and he never got in and out, he didn't have, that he first went to jail when he was 14.
Juvie, I guess. Yeah.
What the fuck did this, what kind of hell did this guy raise at 14 that he would then spend the rest of his life in prison?
Murder.
I mean, it's just like, I don't know. It's just like,
well, here's the thing. I think his prison sentence kept getting extended because they also make it clear he's killed 11 people in jail.
He went to spend 6 months in juvie, like when he was 12 years old, but then he murdered a person and then they just kept on tacking
shit on. And then once every 2 years from then out,
murder. You tried to escape. Okay. There's another. And then now you led a prison riot. Now you're up to, okay. But yeah,
he would have been out like over, he probably got arrested for like TPing a house or something, right?
Yeah.
And then here we are 25 years later and he's still in.
Yeah. They introduce also the Danny Trejo as Johnny 23.
Mm-hmm.
So named because he's committed 23 rapes. He's convicted. And it's
that
interesting.
They know of.
He's also got a tattoo for each one. So he says, well, if the truth, there's a couple points I want to make. Number one, this really makes me rethink what I think about Johnny 5 from Short Circuit.
Fuck yeah. Fuck yeah, it does.
Like, Ali Sheedy's,
that robot.
Ali Sheedy's really, really lucky, right?
For
that,
sure.
That he didn't become Johnny 6. But also, so he makes the points like, well, the true record of Venona be Johnny 600. You've raped 600 women? Is that fucking, this is like the Wilt Chamberlain of rapes. And also, you celebrate this enough to have tattoos over your body? Why do you tattoo only the ones you're convicted of?
Right. That's a damn fine question. The truth to me is that it's 23. Mm-hmm. That's the actual real number.
Right.
And that the 600 is all bluster.
Right. Like, but like, that's the other thing. He's like, man, Danny Trejo, you played a guy who's trying to inflate your rape counts, man. I don't think that's another thing that would fly today.
No, it was the 90s, man.
It's
different.
It's a hell of a drug, the 90s.
So do you want to talk anything about like the actual escape plan here?
The escape attempt hinges on them setting this poor Native American on fire. And then the guards on the plane playing everything wrong.
Yeah.
They open the door and just all kind of flood through and they all get Keystone copped. And
they leave the doors open behind them.
Yeah.
The pilot and co-pilot decide we're going to get in on the action instead of landing the plane like they should and letting law enforcement take care of the situation.
Yeah, because there's no guns on board. We'll get also big asterisks on that. We'll get to that later. They made a big deal about there's no guns on board.
Mm-hmm.
The only gun is in a lockbox in the... But why give the pilot the ultimate gun authority?
Right.
Shouldn't the lockbox be back with the inmates?
Uh-huh.
Because they
have some communication and understand the situation.
Yeah. Or maybe there should be more than one compartment. Like there should be like several layers of defense that you'd have to get to the cockpit.
There are. They just leave them all open.
Yeah.
There are gates. There are doors.
Yeah.
I mean.
Yeah. Because if the pilots this happens almost immediately on takeoff. The pilot's just like, oh, this shit's fucked up. Let's circle back and land. Uh-huh. This movie is over.
No, they have no protocols.
And again, people could say, well, it's a dumb action movie, Aaron. And I could point to like, But we have movies like Predator and we have movies like The Rock that don't do this stupid shit. So,
yeah,
there's a blueprint for better.
Well, here's maybe the most egregious sin of this whole thing is that this movie is driven by the constant danger that they put the female guard in.
Yes.
Because she's like, they have to go back and save her, right?
Right.
Because if they don't open this gate, this whole thing is contained. They land the plane and all the prisoners go off. But the prisoners might kill the female guard.
Danny Trejo might rape the shit out of this female guard. That's the actual danger that they're putting her in throughout the whole movie. They got like a fox, hen, and bag of flour situation where I think Michael T. Williamson is the chicken.
He's the bag of sugar.
Danny
he's
Trejo.
Definitely the bag of sugar.
The female cop is the bag of grain, and Cyrus is the farmer that's trying to get these guys across the boat, because that's the other thing is they give Cyrus a grace note that he's a totally amoral person. He loves indiscriminate serial killers. He loves prison riots. He loves killing cops. He loves killing inmates. But he can't fucking stand a rape.
I know. They've got to... Actually, I'm not even sure what the fuck they're doing with that. He's a bad guy in every other arena, but that one.
He's got this one moral line that that he won't cross that makes him more interesting. It makes
That's the card they play when they want the anti-hero to be sympathetic.
Right, like he'll brutalize other criminals, but leave the children and women alone.
Yeah.
You know, he idolizes a Garland Green who brags about wearing a young girl's head across three straight state lines. Like this shit again, it's a grace note to give a character that doesn't need a grace note. And also it's not a grace note. It just is weird. It's a bizarre tick.
It is. Yeah. I got to say, once they get over the city and they drop Pinball's body, a lot of stuff happens in between, and we can talk about it. Mm-hmm. But probably my favorite scene of the whole movie is when they drop Pinball's body onto that car. That bird shit scene. I remember, like, really, really loving it when I was younger, and I think I still like it. Probably my favorite part of that Pinball scene, though, I've got to say, is when he falls, he crushes the car, and then the car gets hit by other cars. Mm-hmm. And it's funny because first it gets rear-ended. I could see that.
Mm-hmm.
But then there are no less than two cars that straight run a red light full speed to bash that guy, T-bone him.
Right. This guy pulls an intersection and four objects immediately hit him from every conceivable direction.
It's crazy.
Like, the only thing he doesn't get slammed from is I'm surprised that like some gas explosion from a manhole doesn't hit him and blow him up like 20 feet in the air.
Yeah. It's amazing.
Yeah.
Oh man, there are huge problems. This dust storm that they land in is so clearly and obviously a solution to the problem. Well, why the fuck wouldn't they recognize Cyrus?
Right.
When he steps out of this plane and conducts this exchange. So they solve that problem, right? With, it's a dust storm and they're wearing fucking masks. Then he yanks his fucking mask down and says, "Hey, I'm Cyrus the Virus, by the way. And also, can we get the prisoner exchange going?" The problem that they introduce is this plane would never fucking land at that airport. They would never get clearance to land in that dust storm. And if they did, they would never get fucking clearance to take off in that dust storm.
Yeah. And also, did Cyrus plan on a dust storm to happen? Because that's the only way that he would just be like Jeffrey Dahmer or Charles Manson taking over.
Right. Steps off that plane and says, "I'm here for the prisoner exchange."
Right. That's right. Like, no, you fucking aren't. Crazy.
I don't understand it. They needed to solve that problem, but they did it in a way that introduced more problems.
Yeah. They also switched to transponders on these planes with, like a sightseeing. I mean, I get it. The transponder is tracking, but isn't someone in air traffic control monitoring the situation? Like, they've got this very large military aircraft taking off.
Mm-hmm.
That has no transponder. Wouldn't air traffic control? This is a United States air facility. Wouldn't they be like, "What the fuck is this plane?"
Yeah,
like yeah, the transponder makes things easier, but this is a very large radar signature. Meanwhile, the transponder you're expecting to take off is just still sitting there in a hangar.
And you know why they put air traffic controllers in those giant towers, right? It's so that they can see,
right?
That they can survey the land and see where the planes are and visually verify that things are going the way they should. When they see a plane that is supposed to be a huge jail, a huge prison plane.
Yeah, it's a military transport.
And they see that it says Uncle Bob Scenic Tours on it.
Yeah.
They're just going to let that happen?
They're hoping no one notices. I don't even think they're hoping no one notices. I don't think they themselves know what they're like.
Yeah.
We switched transponders. We just showed a guy hotwire one of those giant mega 9-volt batteries. Problem solved.
No, nothing is well considered here. And it gets even worse, too, because when John Cusack decides, I'm going to drive to this airport, tell me how he beats them there. Because they make it clear, they say the number of miles per hour that this plane is traveling.
The only problem is we're not doing 228 miles an hour, we're doing 205. We're dragging, baby.
The landing gear ain't all the way up.
You can't tell me that John Cusack
that
is doing 250 miles per hour.
That capable of 250 miles an hour.
And the plane is going in a straight line. And right. he gave them a head start and left like 20 minutes after interviewing
right.
Cameron Poe's wife and child.
Right.
There's no fucking way he beats them to that airport. It's impossible.
He uses the time travel portals that Kiefer Sutherland uses in 24 to get around L.A.
Right, right.
In the space of, like, goes from one side of L.A. to the other in a space of a commercial break. It's the only thing that makes sense. Let's talk about all the problems about the semi-abandoned airfield.
Okay.
It looks like it should be an abandoned airfield.
It really does, yeah.
But they act like that this is a functional municipal airport that has a functional air traffic control that the Mexican cartel has had to go in and kill. Why is there a four-year-old girl unsupervised at the semi-abandoned airfield just to give Steve Buscemi's off-brand Hannibal Lecter a target
me.
To terrorize that he doesn't even do? Like, you expect him to, like, maybe be some kind of chaotic good, maybe, that he's going to throw, but he literally doesn't do anything.
He does nothing. And but, they try to make him scary with a story and some bondage gear.
That skinny little man butchers 30-something people up and down the eastern seaboard. They say the way he kills those people makes the Manson family look like the Partridge family.
Well, he's on the right flight.
Yeah.
Just like they do with Nick Cage, you
right.
know, with the story.
And then he's also one of the only ones that gets away. Like, we're supposed yeah. to, and it's played like a sly laugh scene when you see him in Vegas, like, betting.
New shooter coming out. New shooter. Does the new shooter feel lucky? Well, does he?
Yes. Yes, he does.
Flash forward to Con Air 2, and he is just covered in hooker blood and everything else. He's got entrails wrapped around his head. It's...
Yeah.
I don't understand. That should have just be gone from the script.
Absolutely. Just take Steve Buscemi's character out entirely.
He adds nothing. He adds... I don't know. It's like... It's like supposed to be like a red herring, but no one gives a shit. Like, this isn't a mystery we're trying... This isn't
no.
a whodunit.
No, and it's a 2-hour and 15-minute movie. You don't need those 5 minutes of Steve Buscemi in there at all.
Oh, boy. John Cusack's character, the U.S. Marshal, makes a big deal about the only gun in this whole airframe is a little pistol that we keep locked up in the pilot's box, except for the brigade's worth of shotguns and machine guns.
Grenade launchers.
And grenade launchers that we keep in the belly of the plane. What?
Okay.
What
okay,
possible
wait,
purpose
wait, wait.
could they load the belly of this plane full of guns? The place they're going is an armed, secure, maximum facility. They have
right.
the gear they need to handle prisoners, right?
And let me ask you, what scenario would call for two grenade launchers? What possible scenario where this plane lands and the criminals take over
uh-huh.
would be made better by a couple of explosions?
Right. Like we saw when they landed at that Carson City. There was already marshals there with tons of
yeah.
shotguns and shit.
Yeah.
You didn't see them, like, march out unarmed and get all their weapons they need off the plane. Like, it's just so they can have this elaborate shootout scene with the fucking National Guard.
Yeah, it's ridiculous.
So they can get John Cusack on an improvised tank.
And so they can make John Malkovich look smart. They can make Cyrus mm-hmm. look like he's a tactical genius,
yeah.
right? Take out the front, take out the back.
Right.
We'll trap him with
like,
a lot of
yeah,
dead bodies.
Like I read Black Hawk Down, too. I understand how to...
exactly.
I've seen Clear and Present Danger. I understand how you take out an armored convoy. Also, did you know that you can crack open like 12 propane cylinders
mm-hmm.
and
get the perfect air to gas mixture?
And you can hotbox the whole world and make it go up just with the light of a match. Like, what the hell?
There are some truly huge explosions.
I mean, that's the thing,
which
like,
were fun to watch.
That's the kind of shit that I could almost forgive in a movie if it was better. But
yeah.
it's just one more thing I kind of want to pile on and be like, get the fuck out of here with this stuff.
I think about this when they take off. This is the part where the car stuff comes to its conclusion. The
mm-hmm.
the Malloy car stuff.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's one of my favorite parts of this movie, actually.
Sure. Yeah.
Just like picking on this guy
because uh-huh.
he's such a douchebag when he rides up in his gloves and his car.
Oh, yeah.
That you want to see that car destroyed. And it's a glorious scene when
they
it
do.
Does
they do.
Happen.
Isn't that your car, Malloy?
Couldn't be. I left mine at the office.
On any other day, that might seem strange.
Thank you.
Like, this is a scene from a much better movie.
It is, when it's attached to the back of that plane and it's gliding along, and the Corvette's like just an aerodynamic enough car that you see it gliding. Yeah, yeah. You're like, oh, like okay, that makes sense. It's kind of like a plane, you know. It's a shark, and this is its water. No, and then it goes crashing to the ground right in front of them.
Yeah,
like, and I loved it.
There's a scene where Nick Cage gets to do like some kickboxing, mm-hmm. And do some sweet scissor kicks against the cartel members. And there again, if it wasn't for the insane coincidence of John Cusack's character arriving to see, Nick Cage would be dead. Mm-hmm. Poe would be dead.
There are two times that happens in this movie. That's the first. Mm-hmm. The second is the prop coming through the wall, where Cyrus has him dead to rights, and then they both dodge the prop.
Yeah.
So let's talk about this Las Vegas Strip crash.
Okay.
One of the most unbelievable things I've ever seen, and I don't mean that in a good way. I mean, some of the stuff looks pretty bad. Like, it's got a lot of dated CG in spots where it really sticks out. Mm-hmm. It's got a lot of, you can tell they used pulleys and levers and shit to move this plane into position and tried to fix it in post with speeding up and slowing down film.
Yeah.
Doesn't work. The most egregious thing, though, is just nobody gets killed.
No.
I mean, this thing comes and lands on a completely empty strip. On any night of the week, the Las Vegas Strip is packed with
gridlocked.
Cars. Gridlocked. There would be no getting out of the way of this thing. It would come and it would land on the roofs of 100 cars.
It would be like Independence Day.
Yeah.
Like you're in New York City and you're trying to flee the explosion. It's just not going to happen.
But that's the thing. Like, they went for this truly amazing setting of a crash, right? If they execute this right, this is one of the all-time great action scenes.
Sure, yeah.
But I feel like they needed a shitload of CG to do it.
Yeah,
and they didn't quite have it. And so instead, they have everybody just run out of the way as a plane traveling 500 miles an hour comes in.
It's very G.I. Joe, where every time a tank explodes, you see the Cobra guys scrambling out. Yeah. Because, like, they don't want a high body count in this movie.
I don't get it. There's, like, one car that gets hit that might have somebody in it.
Yeah. Also, I don't know. I'm not an expert in the Vegas Strip, but I feel like that this plane took, like, 3 or 4 right turns.
To get to all the landmarks.
Exactly. Yeah. So, no, you got to take a left. You got to, it's like, what the fuck?
It's their night out in Vegas.
Yeah, true.
You know?
That's true. It's the day of the dog.
But once they crash, I'm going to say this movie gets actually really amazing.
Yeah, because
to the end.
The plane crash feels like the final set piece.
Yeah.
And Bruckheimer's like, oh, no, hold my beer. We're going to hijack yet another large and practical vehicle and see what possibilities we got to exploit that when they steal the ladder truck.
And it's great. They use all the possibilities of a ladder truck. I mean, they use the ladder. They handcuff Cyrus to it. They extend the ladder and he crashes into a bridge. In what I think is a genius stroke, they have John Cusack fill it full like a goldfish bowl with water from the hose what's his fucking name? The pilot.
Swamp Thing.
Yeah, Swamp Thing is trying to drive this truck, and I assume he drowns to death. Yeah. Like, it, which sounds insane in a car chase, but this man drowns while driving a car.
Yeah. It's pretty inspired. Well, it's like, we talked about this in The Rock, how there is this, you just couldn't kill the bad guy. You had to have this compound thing. Like, you got to launch him out of a rocket, and then he has to fall and get impaled. Cyrus's death might be one of the greatest examples of that.
And then, I mean, it's raining dollar bills and poker chips.
Sure.
And like I said, this should be the most amazing sequence in all action history, but they couldn't quite get there.
Yeah. It is as big as a spectacle, it somehow also looks simultaneously cheap and rushed.
Yeah.
The other thing I'm amazed at, as we've been talking about this movie, is how kind of superfluous to the plot Nick Cage is. If he wasn't on the plane, I still think John Cusack wins.
I guess, okay, maybe also, the one thing he does is go when he starts beating people up. He says, fuck this, I'm going to show you God exists.
Hey, where you going?
I'm going to show you God does exist.
Yeah.
I'm going to perform a Nicolas Cage Christmas miracle and take out this plane. That's the one thing he does.
Yeah, I want to, then, and as an atheist, I'm back to going to church after I saw this movie. Another little thing I want to point out is now that I'm thinking about it, that attack helicopter squadron, as it was filmed, and they literally were in hot pursuit of the jailbird, all three of those helicopters would have slammed head into it. Like, the only way out of the way is because, in actuality, this is a very tiny plane.
Yeah.
They would have just, all three of those things, like, Khomeini's talking shit and getting an erection from shooting this thing out of the sky, and they just, both of the Cobras and the Huey just slam into that, into a fireball.
Which is one way to solve the problem.
It'd be like an Airwolf season finale, is what it would look like. But, anyway. Nick Cage is like a weird passenger, backseat passenger in this movie.
And I feel like at some point they say that, don't they? They're like, Nicolas Cage is like, it's funny that this would happen on the day that I'm released and they somehow found a way to stuck us in the middle of it. Like that kind of thing.
Yeah, he's like Forrest Gump. He just keeps on getting in the middle of these important events, but somehow is not shaped by them, nor does he shape them himself. He's got a little Forrest Gump voice, too. I think we're onto something.
Yeah. All right, there's one other character that I desperately need to talk about.
Okay.
And it's going to be tough to talk about this character in the terms that the movie wants me to talk about it, and also be sensitive to people of this persuasion.
I'm
but what
by fear.
The fuck is Freak from Hackers doing in this film? She can dance.
Or he can dance?
This is the crux of my what the fuck question.
Right.
What does this movie want me to think is going on here? Is this a transgendered woman? Is this a crossdresser? Is this like... Because the character clearly refers to herself as a she.
Okay.
But there's no way that a she in physical form would be locked up with these men, right? They separate genders of prisoners.
Yeah, but they I think they go very... Like, that's one of the controversies around transgender people is like they want to put you in with the people that you... Like they want to put you in... At your birth sex, they don't give a shit about how you present or, you know, the uniquely vulnerable. But honestly, what the movie wants you to do is a Nelson. Ha ha. Look at the weirdo. Yeah. It's hilarious.
Ha ha. Prison bitch. Gay.
Yeah. Just shaking her ass.
Get fucked movie.
Yeah.
Get fucked 1997.
It's not the worst thing in the movie, but it's probably up there.
Yeah.
It's just for a laugh. This movie's, for a rated R movie, is very afraid to have Nick Cage look like anything but wholesome.
Yeah, it's true. I think it's because when he finally reunites with his family, they don't want any questions about whether or not this is going to go well.
Yeah, yeah. They really wanted this Cameron Poe character to be like a Bruce Willis type that's in a giant building, and he's like guerrilla warfaring here and there and covering his tracks, or they want it to be like a... You know, Steven Seagal under siege. And the basic problem is this is a big airplane, but it's essentially one giant room.
Yeah.
10,000 feet in the air, no entries, no exits. And he has to do this horse shit. I'm a bad guy, but I'm a good guy. And there's the tension of where he'd be figured out or won't he be figured out. And there's a whole bunch of things where the other thing is like all these bad guys continue to bring this stranger into their confidence.
Mm hmm.
You know, it's like if Sean Connery popped up in The Rock and General Hummel is like, oh, you're an ex-military guy, too. Let me tell you about what I'm exactly going to do. And all my like everyone spills their guts and brings them in his confidence just because Poe's like, hey, I'd really like to know what's going on.
I want to know what the plan is.
Why you care?
I got just as much riding on this as you. We all convicts here.
Lerner Airfield, Poe, middle of nowhere. That's our rendezvous point. 49 minutes from anything resembling authority. So, now you know.
No, fuck you. Get back in the plane. In fact, I'm just going to chuck you out because you annoyed me.
And he accidentally, when he does prove himself, it's by accident, right? Like this this confrontation with the DEA agent on the plane. He doesn't actually do anything in that situation, but Cyrus gives him all the credit. He's like, great job, Poe.
You did an effective distraction. And the other thing is,
but he didn't mean to.
And when the DEA guy gets shot in the face, like, Nick Cage makes this face like, you did nothing but complicate the situation to get that guy killed.
Yeah.
I don't know why anyone would watch Con Air when you've got Face Off and when you got The Rock and we got Predator. You got so many other really great action. And if you want a dumb action film, a really dumb one, there's always Commando or most of the stuff that Stallone and Schwarzenegger did in the 80s. Why are they pushing Nick Cage as an action hero so hard?
Well, I was going to say that's the only reason to watch this movie is to see Nick Cage with that hair and that accent be an action star for 2 hours and 15 minutes.
Yeah.
That's the only reason to watch it.
We said this a little bit about The Rock, is that no action movie should be over 2 hours long. Mm-hmm. It goes double. Like, maybe you pare this thing down to 90 minutes and you got something. You spend a little bit more time on the actual, making the breakout actual clever, but they clearly spent all their money on paying big stars and big pyrotechnics, and they didn't leave anything over the script, and it's unfortunate.
Season of the Cage.
We hope you've enjoyed our Super Serious film review, but we're not quite done yet. A staple of our Super Serious reviews is our attempts to rewrite, update, and modernize the movies we watch. If you want to see how the rewrite for this movie turned out, head to club.baldmove.com or click the link in this video to sign up and get access to this and other bonus club content.
I said, put the bunny back in the box.